Welcome, and thanks for joining me today on Mortgage Manager Playbook, a podcast for sales leaders who want to improve their team's sales performance and originate more loans. I'm Pat Sherlock, your host. Today's topic is so important, and I'm so glad that we're doing it this year because getting ready for next year, it's all about developing a change management strategy. And I have the perfect expert, and that is Scott Moriarty. He is founder of Mountain View Advisors. He's been a longtime person within our financial services, starting out with a career at Kraft Federal Credit Union. Hi, Scott.
Hello, Pat. How are you?
Well, you probably didn't think I was going to ask about Kraft Federal Credit Union.
You did some research because, like you said, it doesn't even exist anymore. It's changed its name to Quorum. But yes, that was my first real job, if you will.
Well, I think it's a good time to talk about how you got into our industry. I know I heard a little bit about it before, but it was really interesting. And maybe if you can share with our listeners, that'd be great.
Sure. So I, like most, conventionally wound up here, not by choice. Right. And then we're 25 years later, when I said I'm going to change here, we are still talking about mortgages. So it's an interesting industry for sure. I took the 8-year path through college. So, you know, I didn't want to necessarily get out right away. I wanted to drag it out as much as possible. And then over the years, I did everything. I started as a pre-med and then went into fire, EMS, and then carpentry, and then back to school. And I wound up with an economics degree because it was the fastest way out. So I said, all right, maybe I need to go into the financial services industry. But I came out in a bad economy and there were no jobs. So a buddy of mine who worked at Philip Morris, right, I said, hey, the credit union's hiring. And what is a credit union? I didn't even know what a credit union was, right? Goes to show you what I knew. And so anyways, I went in and I interviewed and I wound up I was in a call center. I started at the very, very, you know, the most basic thing. But what I found so interesting about that is I am definitely what you would call a lazy motivated guy, meaning I don't like doing extra clicks or anything like that. So I always kind of are trying to find ways to do things more efficiently. So in the call center, I just noticed a lot of different things. And the beauty of starting there is you get exposed to everything. You get exposed to every aspect of the business. But what, and I think I shared this with you, my training was from a woman who, her name Jeannie Dietz, she passed away. She would stand behind me and she was a long time, you know, credit union person, treat your members right, the whole thing. And she used to smack me when I would say something wrong, said, that's not right. You know, get that right. And I'm like, okay, Gene. You know, so anyway, so I got trained by the best. But what happened is I just began to progress into operational focus, realizing where the systems weren't being maximized, and just started to assert myself. And thankfully, I had a leader that just gave me some bandwidth. And I just started in consumer lending, went into equity lending, went into mortgage lending, went into business lending, and just tried to find ways to optimize their technology and their change management. So it's just been an evolution. And then from there, I've been in and out of the credit union industry. I've been involved as an entrepreneur, consultant, did even a little virtual world, 3D avatar-based learning, but that was a little too early. So I've had my hands in a variety of things, but mortgages always seems to be the consistent path that I wind up in. And that's why we have our consultancy company today, Mountain View Advisors.
Well, that leads to a great question because you've been doing the consulting side for a long time. And I'm curious about what you see out there that lenders should be addressing but are not addressing.
Well, an ocean of things, right? Sure. So in a variety of our topics related to mortgage platform technology, basically, it's there's an explosion of innovation and technology that's going on. But most of the organizations that I deal with are reactive in their state. They feel they have to implement a system and forget it. You just can't do that. And so not having any sustained management and or oversight of the technology interfaces, vendors, which then leads into a lot of more serious things, right? Unintended consequences. You know, there's a lot right now coming out on, you know, ByStar Bank, you know, Credit Union was cited by the Department of Justice for bad change management. Literally, that was what they were cited for, right? And so that relevancy of how we manage change and the importance of putting that in there is what I see missing. Secondly, what you see are individuals that are still doing the work the old way and not leveraging the systems that capabilities because they don't have people to help them leverage that. And then the third and final thing I would say is a lack of transparency and understanding of their data. And because they can't see what they're doing, they can't measure it. And because they can't measure it, they don't know what it is. So those are very common things. And I've seen them in credit. You know, I do a lot of work in credit unions, but in mortgage banks, especially, because they have limited resources and they have kind of certainly a different business model, but that's consistently what
So talk about next year. This is around the corner. What do you see as priorities that lenders are having? And then we can talk about how to make a change management strategy from the get-go.
Well, we all know we all know the market we're coming out of, and we all know that the difficulty over the last 2 years has really actually created an opportunity for change, but I have not seen enough organizations take advantage of that. The shift of preparation towards an interest rate environment coming back to something more stable and getting themselves prepared for purchase transactions, because the refinance transactions will come back, but they're going to be completely different life cycle. Getting prepared for that marketplace, and then getting prepared to deal with secondary outlets, right? Because we also have, for depositories anyway, they have balance sheet restrictions on what mortgages they can put on. So planning on the markets they want to go into versus just doing mortgages. Where are they strategically thinking about going? And then that leads into the intersection, which I'm also seeing in this space, is fair lending, unintended consequences of making sure you understand the market you're going into and why. So there's a lot there that they're looking at. But from a change standpoint, how is it that we're going to stabilize our current digital solution? If I don't have a digital solution, what is a digital solution, and how am I going to work? And I do see if some people are really not in there. And so they're a little further back. But for those that are more advanced, it's now, how do I maximize the technology and create a digital solution that does not get in the way of the personal touch that we require, especially from a mortgage sales standpoint, right? Let the technology work for us versus replace us. And how do we make that work? So those are key things that we're advising our clients on as we move ahead.
Sure. So when you actually look at next year, it doesn't look like refis are going to be coming back. It does look like if you look at all the interest rate projections, it seems to be pretty much similar to what it was this year. I find it interesting that they haven't addressed this before because this is our market. And is that your experience?
Well, certainly having been in depository land more often than not, there is, it's more of a reactive. Our members come to us, our borrowers come to us. So, and refinance business was 80, 70, 80% of the pipeline. So it was, we got, a little happy and fat in that last recycle boom, right? And so we don't take advantage or try to optimize when the business is coming in. It's only when the business is gone that we start to say, oh, where's the business, right? Right. So there's an example of reactive culture. And when the interest rate shocks happened and business dried up and nobody was prepared to move into the purchase market, which is a different workflow, which is a different staffing model, which is a different training model. So that's what they should be focusing on if they haven't already. I mean, if we're just starting now, they're certainly going to be a little bit behind. But it's never too late to start, which is, how do I prepare to have a operation and sales culture that is oriented towards the purchase transaction, is the key focal point for 2024.
Well, it is certainly, I think, an interesting strategy that you're talking about it, but it really delves into this whole issue of developing a change management strategy. And I think it's interesting to me because I don't see very many institutions actually doing it and doing it the right way. And so why don't we jump into that, our topic today, and talk about the basics of how you start it and then talk about what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah, and for us, we have a fairly standardized process. Change management has, there's a lot of science behind it. You can, throw out Lean, Six Sigma. I love using Agile with credit unions, and people will bend over and touch their toes because they're right. So there's different types of project and change methodologies, but at the end of the day, you have to assess your organization's capacity to change. And that does start at the leadership level, helping them understand if whether or not they are effective at change. I'm working with one client right now that is in the transition to becoming a $10 billion institution. And that is a, you know, that's a, that's a, hey, CFPB is going to start paying attention to us. Well, what we help them realize is they're not ready for that yet, right? They don't have the change mechanisms in place. They don't have project management in place. They don't have process data analysts, and that's where the world has changed. So getting to an understanding at the leadership level that we need to put resources into how we will change our culture to be a proactive, change-oriented culture, and helping them also realize this is not an overnight transition, this is an over time transition. So getting the leadership to say, we are going to do this, and then identifying the core areas of the organization where they believe they need it most. You couple that with then where does change happen and where we place that change, mm-hmm. you know, those change mechanisms, that could be different for each organization as well. But we always know, like in credit unions, for example, where I spend a lot of my time, all the IT folks are there, but they don't know anything about the business. So therefore, they're not very effective. And so from there, so it's the resources. That's the second thing. Where are my resources coming from? How are they being shared if they are being shared mm-hmm. and or dedicated to a particular area of the business? And what are the skills needed? And that's kind of that third thing. It is not loan. It's not just sales and processing and underwriting any longer. It is analytics. Mm-hmm. It is process mapping. It is. And so are we ready to hire for that? Or more importantly, have we found the, I always call them the heretic within the unit that thinks a little differently. All right, now you're coming over to a change team and we're going to teach you all these new things. And that to me is, you know, what the leadership of the organizations have to admit. And then how do I get started is, okay, I need to realize I have to build a change strategy. And you start by doing what we call a current state assessment.
So talk about, I'm curious with all your experience on this topic, mm-hmm. is that typically is the change coming when it's at the executive level, when they have changed managers, or right. is it coming because performance is not where it should be and all of those is, which typically is really the driver when somebody new comes in, or is it basically that, okay, you know, I got sued by the government?
Well, tragically, I find it to be more the latter, right? It's a reactive response. Mm-hmm. But we are seeing, especially now in the industry, that you are seeing leadership turnover. But what I've seen there, and I'll come back to that, is they have an expectation that certain fundamental change mechanisms are in place. And mm-hmm. depending on the organization, when they get there, they realize that it's not in place.
Yeah.
And that the individuals that they're hiring also have an expectation that certain things are in place. And then when they come in, they have never built like change management, control management, integrated control. So now they're behind, right? And so all of a sudden we have new leadership coming in with great expectations and a lot of energy, but then not fully realizing the lack of capacity for them to meet their goals and objectives. But I would say generally what I do see is it's more when we do get calls, you know, one of the main ones is we don't have a good fit between our sales team and our ops team. And we have a lot of friction, right? That's one of the number one ones we get. And it's, well, how do we help correct that? Well, that's first and foremost, understanding what each area does, bringing those areas together, right? And having dialogue. And certainly more now where it's more prevalent, we are starting to see more government citation, Department of Justice on things, like I said, change management and or lack of project management as a risk, right, to their customer base and or member base.
So is it normal for you, or are you seeing a trend? And my experience in the credit union space is they tend to hire leadership from other credit unions and not really move out of to another grouping, like let's say the depositories or even the independent mortgage bankers. So is that still the case? In other words,
I'm seeing a slight transition there. Actually, I mean, you certainly see that. And really, sure. you know, mm-hmm. not to make this all about credit unions, but I would say it's generally about the asset size of the organization.
Sure.
And what exposure to outside world, like, so with credit unions in history, CEOs typically would be there 30, 40 years, right?
Yes.
And then, you know, and that becomes a very stale, reactive, you know, penny-wise, pound foolish organization. And then it's the board says, okay, we want change. Well, I'm actually seeing on the other hand, they're bringing in community bankers. And there's where I see some of that community bank folk coming in and that culture change, it becomes a quick, you know, thing. Was mm-hmm. like I said, where is my project management team? We don't have a project manager. Where's my KPIs? Where's my data? You know, all of that has to be built. And I think that then elongates the expectations mm-hmm. of the new CEO, right? And can create frustration. So it's a bit of a balance, but certainly with the smaller organizations, you will see them stay within that ecosystem. And the challenge of that is that they're not seeing the outside world as much and realizing how the ecosystem has changed. So it's a balancing act.
Well, let's get into the nitty-gritty. And so let's assume they want to change at the executive level. They always they see the day-to-day that they want to change. And so and then we're now talking about you're talking about a project management team. And so is that your first step is that you obviously are looking at the current state status and then of course then you got to get to the nitty-gritty of how you're going to pull it together. And it's some combination, I would assume, of their employees and your company. And so is talk about that whole normal best practice of how it should work.
I mean, if the first thing that we, when we are able to engage, and even if we're not, even when I've been in the leader in my own organization, or even in the past, and having driven change ourselves, is number one is empowerment. That the leader has to enable their leaders that are going to help drive that change to have complete transparency. One of the biggest obstacles to any successful change process is a fear of exposing what we call skeletons in the closet, right? Fear of what, you know, what's. And so the first thing a leader can do is number one is empower both their leaders and then their leaders to empower their staffs to give complete transparency. Because we have to, it's one thing to know you have to change, it's another thing to know what to change. And the way you need to know what to change has to start with with the people who do the work. And I see that fundamentally be an area where we're saying we're just going to change based on what. And you know, number one, well, our mortgage system doesn't work. Let's get a new mortgage system. How do you know if your mortgage system doesn't work if you haven't looked at it? How do you know if you've even maintained it? I was working with one client, they were 14 releases behind. Well, of course the mortgage system doesn't work. You're still working on the system from the 1980s, right? So let's, you know, staying on the scenario where we have some new leadership that's saying, let's go ahead and change. And then they empower their leaders to say, let's go ahead and transparency, doing the current state workflow assessment, sitting down, desktop, show me your work, document the work, show me the steps. As I'm looking at that, looking for areas of gaps related to compliance, which is a big one. Is compliance integrated in? How is your process working? How is the automation within that process working? And then document. Have to document your workflows, document your current state. Document the gaps of what's missing, right? Which then leads into a framework of a project timeline, right? So you see, we haven't even started with a project team yet, and we have it's just getting that framework. While you're doing that, one of the most important things with any change management is adoption, right? And so what we always encourage is it's one thing for the leaders to say change, and it's another thing for the staff members to want to change, right? So it's being motivated to change versus being afraid, you know, of change. And to do that, you bring them, the people who do the work, into the change team, and you empower them to become evangelists for the rest of the individuals that are going to adopt change because they know they had a say. And so, you know, it's one thing for me to come in and say, here's the perfect process and it's the perfect system, but if nobody's going to adopt it, it's not going to be effective. So through the current state assessment, we're also building a bit of confidence in, okay, I get it, we can change now. And so getting away from that fear of change and helping them realize that motivating for change is going to be helpful. And so after we do the current state and we document it, then we lay out that project timeline. We sit with the leadership team and we bring the staff members in that were part of that change to begin to prioritize those things. Some of them are strategic, some of them are tactical. We then put together what we call a strategic alignment, which breaks you down to four or five core strategic changes, with operational change, sales change, right? Yeah, investing in our people, and lay out really what's probably close to an 18 month to 2 year plan that then looks at technology, people, process, system, right? And ultimately service.
That's what was one of my questions is that the current state is figured in what length of time is that? And then the actual determination of what you're going to do is that 18 to 24 months. So how long does the current status go on? And I assume you're always working on the operational side first.
We start on the operational side, but generally we're in there because we have sales friction, right?
There's
And
sales problem.
so what we then do is we try to bring the sales teams in early into our process because what we find is most people just assume it, you know, they don't know what's going on. So we always tell everybody on our teams that we develop, know what happened before you got it, know what you did, and then know what's going to happen after you hand it off Because what we see 90% of the time is the person that it's getting handed off to is like, well, you never do this, this, and this. Well, if you have some dialogue and I do this, this, and this, guess what? This is going to move more quickly. And then from there, it's prioritizing the impact. We always look at, you know, what's it, if it's going to impact the borrower positively, it should rise to the top. So we help score that. If it impacts the way individuals, you know, the people who do the work, if it makes it more efficient, that gets a high grade. If it helps eliminate dual data entry and or stare and compare, that gets a point, and that kind of rises to the top of what we're going to start to prioritize. And then finally, but never least important, is our data being enhanced while we're making the change so we can get to a better understanding of what we're doing, and are the compliance controls integrated? And that's the most critical one, so that we don't get ourselves afoul of possibly unintended consequences, especially in the mortgage industry, because we have a lot of areas where we have to make sure we cover. And so you know, that's ultimately how you start to develop that plan, and then you start looking at your vendor stack. And then you start to look at, you know, what vendor spaces, you know, when was the last time you, from a LOS to a POS to all of the different vendors that plug in. I have from a lot of my presentations, I have ecosystem of the digital mortgage lending space. We did one client, there was 54 different vendors plugged into the entire ecosystem from point of sale all the way through servicing and loss mitigation. Right. I mean, and people don't even realize how complex that ecosystem actually is and who's maintaining that. So you're now not only just looking at what I need to change within the organization, it's who am I going to enable and what resources do I need? And third parties are a part of that, whether it's resources like mine to help you do the process mapping and help lay the project and even help develop project expertise, or whether it's our vendors who provide solutions on a lot of these things. And just getting them to help you understand what the capabilities are and how to enact it. And so that then kind of gives you that project plan. And then, like you said, what are the resources I need? It's, to me, whenever you're looking at any change initiative, it has to have the leadership atop from finance, from ops, from sales, right? And from strategy. They have to be part of that discussion. They have to inform it. And they have to get information in their respective areas to make that happen. And then they become leaders on what I call a project, like a change team, right?
Sure.
That becomes a steering committee that then we, you know, so anyway, so that's how we get started and getting that engagement and getting to a project resource or project roadmap. When they don't have a project, you know, resources or project expertise, I generally just go out and get a, you know, five project managers. You have resources within your organization that probably need training, right? And, you know, what kind of training do you want them to have? But keeping them almost as a dedicated change team that then serves the respective verticals, let's say mortgages, right? You have secondary vertical, you have your sales vertical, you have your ops vertical, you have your servicing vertical, right? Then what is the team and resources needed to keep all of those components moving proactively? So, you know, what that does is then enable, again, buy-in. And with the steering committee, what you then do is we call it kind of that change cycle, right? You do our discovery, which is what are the things we're working on as you lay out your plan. You do your configuration, right? So one segment is discovery. That gives us a list. From that list, we do configuration and update. And then the final piece is having a training and communication component in everything that we're changing, so that as we're changing, because we have our plan, there's an awareness and there's buy-in because they're part of the change as we begin to implement the change. Now, the other thing is we set expectations. It's going to be bumpy, right? We're not going to be very effective to start, right? And that's okay, because that's where the learning cycle comes in.
Sure.
And we say, you know, what is it we know and what is it we need? And then once we know what we need, where can I get it? And do I have it? If I don't have it, where do I go get it?
So talk about, I'm just curious on how many companies, and not just credit unions, but all financial, how many companies actually have a project team in place or a change management team in place?
So I would say I generally, again, looking through the credit unions, but like right now I'm working with a mortgage bank that they're a little engine that could, but they have 8 employees. They don't have any project resources. They'll never have project resources. They'll never have the capacity to have project resources. So what we've been able to help them with is to stay proactively informed on their tech stack and help them realize the types of changes. But we've built those same teams even within that small unit. Right. So the methodology, we do it a little bit differently, but we, as a consultant, my number one job is to help you implement, but also to make sure that when we leave, what
You
we've
can do
done
it.
is sustainable. Right. So even with a small organization within, the larger depositories, it's changing finally, but over the last, years before that, any organization probably under $1.5 to $2 billion in assets, I have found to be very light. Very, very light on project
I would think.
teams, very, very light on technological acumen, if you will, within the respective domain that you're talking about. As you get into that, $2.5 to $5 billion, they know they're starting to do that. They have more resources. They have more bench strength. But even those teams are coming in a reactive state, like we said in the beginning, where they have an expectation that some of these components are there and they're not.
And they're
Or
not.
They're training somebody from in the organization,
yeah.
which, like I said, I'm not always opposed to, but somebody that's still got blinders on, so they're not a very effective project team because they've really never seen the outside world and don't know what's available to them. So,
sure.
And then as the organizations get larger, I do see
you see the
see
teams.
More of the project resources.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have you come back and talk about vendor stacking and how to evaluate them. But we only have a few minutes left. Could you share a couple of takeaways about making sure that the change development strategy gets in place the right way?
Yeah, I think number one is understanding the need to change, right? Number two is then understanding what's needed for your current state assessment. What area of the organization you're going to look at. I mean, obviously we're a mortgage focus here. So we'll, say, our mortgage operation needs to improve. So have a strategic motivation for change, which is
sure.
We want to increase our mortgage X, right? And therefore we need to do this. So once that's done, then empower leadership within that particular domain to get the resources that they need and or help them assess what resources they do need. And then the third thing is what kind of components are going to be need to record it, document it, and then put a project team going ahead. Or really, I don't even like calling it a project team. I like calling it kind of a change team or a steering committee that has dialogue. Leadership is being informed of the changes. The people that are doing the changes are continually changing that and documenting those changes as we go. And then making sure that the awareness and buy-in, right? We haven't talked about it, but that fear of change. Well, when you start automating, the number one thing people think is I'm not going to have a job. And, I used to say that's not the case anymore. That is more, as you're introducing more machine learning and automated, augmented intelligence, which I call it. I know we all call it AI. You are going to start seeing at a faster clip, probably some of that. So what are you going to do to help them motivate change, which is find ways to repurpose those individuals, right? So that's that, so just some of those ways around that. But those, I think, are the three key areas, whether you're an organization with new leadership or an organization that has, some leadership that says, okay, and we've had a bad experience, right? We got we got cited or we had a bad member complaint or whatever the case may be that drives that change. So.
Well, we have to have you come back and talk some more because this is such an important topic. And I agree with you 100%. Lenders have to really be proactive and not reactive is what it comes down to. So Scott, how can our listeners get a hold of you? And
sure. So we're Mountain View Advisors. I know it's a long word. Our website is mountainviewadvisors.com. So by all means, you can reach out to us there. You certainly can reach out to us via email, scott@mountainviewadvisors.com, and or give us a call. But or if they reach out through you, you certainly can connect them as well. Certainly a few ways to get to us. And if you're in the credit union space, by all means, join our Curins, which we're working on, which are those credit union real estate networks. And you can get in touch with us through there as well. So.
No, or connect with you on LinkedIn, which is what I did.
there's that too. Yes, I am on LinkedIn. Thank you. My social media prowess is not as good as my change management prowess, unfortunately.
Anyway, well, I want to thank Scott for sharing his wisdom today. And I want to thank our listeners for listening. And certainly stay tuned to our next episode of Mortgage Manager's Playbook. Thanks so much, Scott.
Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to Mortgage Manager Playbook. You can catch up on all our episodes by subscribing to receive each week a new show. Don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and team members. If you're looking to increase production, call me to discuss my prospecting sales training program, Ramping Up Realtor Referral Sources. Check out my website, www.patsherlock.com.